भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिन्निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। सो विल कंटिन्यू वेयर वी लेफ्ट ऑफ इन द चैप्टर 10। We completed till the 12th verse. So I will just briefly recapitulate what we discussed in the chapter 10. So once we complete every chapter, whenever we have the next chapter, the next week the test is the hereafter there will always be a question about chapter summary of that chapter. So next week test, like we will have the chapter summary about chapter 10. So that question will be there by default. So you have to, that will give a some idea, like you'll know like what is there in each chapter. So far we started with the sixth chapter contained the prayers of the demigods when Krishna had accomplished his mission. The demigods appeared from the abodes and then they offered their prayers, and then they said that if you desire you may actually take, since you have accomplished your mission, if you desire that you may return back to your abode. So then after that Krishna called all the dynasties of the, all this members of the Yadu dynasty, and he told them to actually go to Prabhasa Kshetra to perform atonement there for the actually the curse which actually fell upon the Yadu dynasty. So that time Uddhava actually understood the plan of the Lord, and then Uddhava approaches Krishna. So that is how the 6th chapter ended. And then the 7th chapter begins with the Uddhava Gita. So Krishna initially instructed Uddhava about, of course Uddhava approached Krishna, he glorified Krishna, how he is a perfect master, and Krishna gave instructions and renunciation. And then Uddhava asked that how can, but your instructions and renunciation is very difficult for me to practice, how is it possible to practice those instructions? So then Krishna spoke about actually even people who are actually far less than you, who are lower than you, they actually understand what is the highest benefit simply by using their intelligence. So when a person, by simply by using one's intelligence, one can deliver oneself, and in this way intelligence acts as one's spiritual master. And then Krishna, in order to describe how the intelligence can act as one's spiritual master, what does he do? He actually describes the conversation between Avadhut Brahmana and Maharaj Yadu. So then he narrates how the Yadu Maharaj meets Avadhut Brahmana, and then Yadu Maharaj questions Avadhut Brahmana. He asks different questions. You appear to be very learned and beautiful, and you are also physically fit, but you are always inactive. You are appearing like a madman. Why did you actually renounce this world? Then Avadhut Brahmana starts narrating the lessons he learned from the 24 gurus. So that is chapter 7, 8 and 9. So that is so you have to just for understanding the overview of the chapter. So overview you will have to write, you have distributed the notes, the spiral bound notes in the beginning of the course. So based on that, overview, what I expect is that in that chapter, say 1 to 5 verses, 6 to 10 verses, like that, the breakdown of the verses based on the theme wise, so that you have to write just to the point. So you must be, sometimes we have, while going through individual verses, then we forget the overall picture of the chapter and overall how it is flowing there. So the so now in the 10th chapter, Krishna talks about the nature of fruitive activity. So the chapter began with how Krishna spoke about, when he was narrating the 24 gurus, he spoke about that many of the gurus were about what qualities which a saintly person should develop. Tolerance from the earth, selflessness from mountain, different qualities a saintly person should develop. So now he is describing the practical means of developing those, attaining such a saintly position. So that is how he begins the chapter. So he says that one should practice the Varnashram Dharma, taking shelter of me, and according to my instruction, one should perform one's duties of, according to one duties of Varnashram, without any desire. Akamatma Samacharet. And then he said in the next verse that how to become desireless, in order to become, because he explained that one should practice the Varnashram Dharma without having a desire, without having material desires. So how is it possible to free one from material desires? That he described in the second verse, that for that one should meditate upon the spiritual goal, and also one should meditate upon how the endeavors for material sense gratification, it actually results in opposite results. It ultimately ends up giving opposite results. And then in the third verse, Krishna said that if a person wants to get spiritual results are not obtained by material activities, or simply they are not obtained by simply the contact of the material senses of the sense objects. Material activities only give temporary results. He explained it in the third verse. And then in the fourth verse, he said that when a person is trying to follow the path of spiritual life, in the beginning, because this chapter is basically, he is talking about how the whole theme of the chapter is how the path of fruitive activities, it ultimately, it is actually useless. The path of fruitive activity, either through pious means or through the sinful means, ultimately it will end up in frustration. So now in the fourth verse, he is saying that when a person is trying, in the beginning stage, a person should perform karma without desire and offering them to Krishna. And then in the perfected state, jignasayam sampravrto means when a person is like searching for Krishna in the perfected stage, then for such a person, there is no impetus to perform karmas. He doesn't even have to perform the karmic activity. Yoga Ruda, Yoga Rurukshu, in the beginning stage of yoga, in the perfected stage of yoga. In the beginning stage, one should not give up the work, one should perform one's duties, but without the desire to enjoy the fruits. But in the highest stage, when a person is searching, jignyasayan sampravruto means, when a person is searching for Krishna, in that time one is not actually, there is no impetus to even perform the karmas. And then in the fifth chapter, in the fifth verse he talked about how a person should follow the Yama and Niyama. So here Yama refers to major regulatory principles or major prohibitions, and Niyama refers to the minor regulatory principles. So both one should try to practice. Major regulatory principles one should definitely practice. It involves like meat eating, intoxication, licit gambling. But sometimes the minor regulatory principles one may not be able to practice, but a person can still maintain spiritual consciousness even though sometimes a person may not be able to minor regulative principles like taking bath thrice a day, like that. And then not only simply practicing these regulations is not sufficient, but one should actually take shelter of the Guru. And three qualities of the Guru are also mentioned in the fifth verse. And then having mentioned the qualities of the Guru, then in the next verse he describes the qualities of a disciple, the sixth verse. And then in the seventh verse, because one of the qualities he mentioned in regards to the, when he talked about the qualities of a disciple, it is about being freed from false proprietorship. So in the seventh verse he says, how to give up the sense of false proprietorship. So you see the connection between the verses, how to give the sense of false proprietorship, that is by seeing one's real self-interest in life in all circumstances. Like, what is my real self-interest in life? When you always keep your focus on that, by that one, a person can give up the sense of false proprietorship. And then in the 8th and 9th verse, he talks about the difference between the body and the soul, using the analogy of fire and firewood. 8th and 9th verse. And then in the 10th verse he said that a living entity gets this material body because of the avidya potency of the Lord, because of the ignorance. And Vidya potency of the Lord cuts that bondage of ignorance. So he talked about the difference between the body and soul, but why the material body is imposed upon, because of the avidya potency, and a person can get out of that through the vidya potency. And then in the 11th verse he said that one should give up this bodily conception by careful inquiry and analysis, and by increasing one's sadhana. By these two things, careful inquiry, tasmat jigyasaya, by inquiry or analysis, and by increasing one's sadhana. So that he described in the 11th verse. And then in the 12th verse, he mentions that this knowledge is also obtained through the Guru. The knowledge obtained through the Guru, it actually destroys the ignorance. That is explained using an analogy. Guru is we may not experience the analogy, but in a fire sacrifice there is a lower arani wood, there is a upper arani wood, and between that there is a kindling stick, and then because of the friction then the fire comes out, and the fire actually consumes all the three. So the lower arani wood is like the Guru, upper arani wood is like a disciple, and the kindling stick is like the teachings which the spiritual master imparts to the disciple, and the teachings from that fire comes out, and that actually consumes the ignorance. He explains in the 12th verse. Now we will go to the 13th verse.
Vaisharadi sati vishuddha buddhir मायां गुण संप्रसूतां गुणांश संदह्य यदात्ममेतत् Swayam cha shamyat asamidyat agni.
By submissively hearing from an expert spiritual master, an expert disciple develops pure knowledge, which repels the onslaught of material illusion arising from the three modes of material nature. Finally, this pure knowledge itself ceases, just as fire ceases when the stock of fuel has been consumed.
So here, Vaisharadi, you know, Visharad means only as expert. Vaisharadi means the knowledge which is available from the expert person. Knowledge, the previous verse talked about how the knowledge is obtained from the spiritual master. The knowledge which is obtained from the spiritual master, what does it do? Ati Vishuddha, that knowledge is actually extremely pure. Pure Vidya arising from the spiritual master destroys the Dunoti Maya Guna Samprasutam. It destroys the Avidya in the form of the grass and subtle body. Because of Avidya, we have the grass and subtle body. So that knowledge actually destroys this. And then after destroying the Avidya, so this knowledge which is called as Vidya, as I mentioned previous, in the previous verse has explained that because of Avidya a person is in bondage, because of the Avidya potency a living entity is in bondage, and by the Vidya potency of the Lord it cuts the bondage. So the Vidya potency is like the knowledge that is compared to the fire. So what is explained here is that, so after destroying that Avidya, after destroying the grass and subtle body, this Vidya itself is destroyed, just like fire goes out when deprived of fuel. So the fire comes out through the lower Arani wood and upper Arani wood, and then after that the fire itself actually dies out. So that means
the analogy is, of course, it's quite graphic, but still, why is it like that? The pure knowledge itself ceases.
So what actually here means Vidya is that, we will actually discuss that little more in detail when you come to the 19th chapter, when Krishna says that Jnanam cha mayi sanyaset. So here what Vidya refers to is that it refers to the, especially the difference between the matter and spirit. Especially in the path of jnana, in the path of knowledge, a person actually, in order to make advancement, a person is constantly analyzing what is matter and what is spirit. He is actually rejecting the matter. So here the Vidya actually refers to this jnana. It does not refer to the knowledge about the Supreme Personality of God. So if you read the first paragraph in the purport, as one advances to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness, experiencing the presence of the Lord everywhere, one's attention shifts to the transcendental platform. So at that time, pure knowledge itself, that is Vidya, pure knowledge itself, one's constant technical awareness of illusion diminishes, just as fire diminishes and is extinguished after consuming its stock of fuel. So when the fire comes, fire is compared to the knowledge here, Vidya, but then after the fuel is consumed, the fire itself dies up.
Because it becomes unimportant.
In the sense that once a person becomes situated in the, he is constantly absorbed in the Supreme Lord's qualities and nature pastimes, then he is not so much bothered about
the
matter and spirit, because he is already situated on the spiritual platform. So this knowledge actually refers to come out of the bodily platform. Difference between the body and the soul, matter and spirit.
Yeah,
in the sense, the devotees who are speaking according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, like we had discussed last week, that one should about the many gurus. We can have many siksha gurus, but one diksha guru. Like whatever we learn from the diksha guru, we try to actually confirm that by hearing from other siksha gurus. We actually try to solidify that teaching which we learned from the diksha guru. So here, so that vidya itself gets destroyed, just like fire goes out when it runs out of fuel. So then the 14th to 16th verse, Krishna is actually, what he says is that he is proposing the philosophy of Jaimini. So he is saying that the Jaimini and his followers, they have a philosophy by which they contradict my opinion. Even if you take their opinion, even if you follow their philosophy, you will ultimately have to undergo repeated birth and death. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, I think 25th or 26th chapter, he says that even if you accept the body to be eternal and the soul is actually, soul will die, even if you accept the philosophy of Lokayatas and other philosophers, still you should fight the war, like that he gives an argument. So here, similarly, he says that even if you accept the philosophy of Jaimini and his followers, he will explain that philosophy, and then he says, even if you accept their philosophy, then you will have to undergo repeated miseries. So you can read the translation, 14th to 16th verse.
My dear Uddhava, I have just explained to you perfect knowledge. There are philosophers, however, who challenge my conclusion. They state that the natural position of the living entity is to engage in creative activities, and they see him as the enjoyer of happiness and unhappiness that accrue from his own work. According to this materialistic philosophy, the world, time, the revealed scripture and the self are all variegated and eternal, existing as a perpetual flow of transformations. Knowledge, moreover, cannot be one or eternal, because it arises from the different and changing forms of objects. Thus, knowledge itself is always subject to change. Even if you accept such a philosophy, my dear Uddhava, there will still be perpetual birth, death, old age and disease. Since all living entities must accept a material body subject to the influence of time.
So what he is saying here is that there are some people who challenge my conclusion. So what is their opinion? So they say that this world will never perish. This world will never perish. This world is actually eternal. And such people say that all the sense objects, whatever we try to enjoy, they are also eternal. Suppose sense objects, you are trying to enjoy some sense object, that may disappear, but after some time it will again come. The sense, they are also eternal. So there is no need to actually stop trying to, there is no need to stop enjoying the sense objects. So the world is eternal. The world is, it is not, it is substantial, it is not made of Maya. And they say that the Atma, the living entity, is not an eternal form of knowledge. A person always has changing, he has got changing transformations of knowledge. But he says that, I'll read this purport in the second page. They say knowledge arises not from some absolute truth, but from the differences among material objects. Knowledge therefore is not eternal and is subject to change. So the assumption hidden in this statement is that there is no spirit soul who possesses eternal constant knowledge of a single unchanging reality. So what they are trying to say is here is that, because Krishna's whole point is that the path of fruitive activities is going to end in misery, so one should not actually follow that path. But he says, there are other philosophers who oppose my conclusion, and they say that there is no need to actually stop enjoying this sense objects, because the world is going to be permanent, the sense objects are also going to be permanent, and it may disappear for a while, but then again it will appear. The world is it's not a illusory sense, in the sense that it is permanent, it has a substance. So like that they propose. So then for that, then Krishna refutes in the last section of this purport. Prabhupada gives three arguments given in the purport why one should not follow this philosophy. So Krishna is saying, even if you accept for argument's sake, if you accept this philosophy of the Jaimini and their followers, one can easily demonstrate that the path of even regulated sense gratification, that will bring many unwanted and miserable results to the living entity. Even if a person tries to enjoy regulated sense gratification, it will actually lead to many miserable results. So therefore, even from a materialistic viewpoint, detachment is desirable. So then he says he talks about material time. So material time is divided into days, weeks, months, years, etc. And by the passage of material time, the living entity, every living entity is repeatedly, he is forced to undergo the birth, old age, disease and death. So therefore, such miseries occur all over the universe. They are actually well known. So it is not that if you follow this path of the Jaimini and others, that you will not be able to avoid these miseries of birth, old age, disease and death. You will have to undergo these miseries. So it's not, you cannot actually avoid them. And then thirdly, Krishna says that even when a person is trying to follow the path of regulated sense gratification, one will commit many mistakes. One will inevitably commit many mistakes. And because of those mistakes, one will have to suffer. Just like what the classic example is, that the story of King Nriga. King Nriga, he was following the path of regulated sense gratification, pious sense gratification. But he was bound to commit, even in that he committed mistakes and he had to become a lizard. So that's what Krishna says here. In fact, there is a similar verse which comes later also. So Krishna is basically giving the opinion of the Jaimini philosophers, who say that there's no need to give up this world. One can continue to enjoy this world. Everything is eternal. Sense objects are eternal. But Krishna is refuting, if you accept that philosophy, it's still, you cannot avoid the miseries.
Jaimini was a disciple of Vedvyasa.
Yeah.
How come his philosophy is not Vaishnava philosophy?
Yeah, in the sense, there are six disciples, the six systems of philosophy are there. So out of that, the Vedanta philosophy, that is like the conclusive, that contains, that is the Vaishnava philosophy. But the other five, Vyasadeva's other five disciples,
Patanjali,
Jaimini, Kapila, Gautama. So they actually, their philosophy is not, their philosophy is partially correct, but you cannot actually take it as the conclusion of the whole thing. Just like, for example, suppose we take the field of medicine. So allopathy, the different fields of medicine are there. So in the case of allopathy sees the body as a combination of chemicals. So in order to make a person free from a disease, they inject some other chemicals in order to cure the person. So body is a combination of chemicals, it is true. But then, it is just having a little narrow picture of the whole body. like there are in the Ayurveda body is a combination of kapha, vata, pitta. So there are certain diseases which the allopathy cannot cure, but which can be cured by other this one, because there the model is something little more, it compasses more components, more factors of the whole body. In the same way, these five philosophies, the five disciples of Vedavyasa, their philosophies are correct in a limited sense. But when you try to extend to the whole this one, then they actually fail. They fail. But Vedanta philosophy, it compasses the encompasses the all the factors. Just like some medical science, it actually takes into care of only some factors. So because of that, they are not able to address other diseases. But some other medical, this one, it actually takes into all the factors. So that's why Vedavyas, so these disciples, they gave these five philosophies. But then Vedavyas were looking, he wanted a son to whom he wanted to teach the ultimate essence of the Vedas, that is Srimad Bhagavad. So therefore he performed austerities, special austerities, and begot Shukadeva Goswami. One of the name of Shukadeva Goswami is Badarayana. So Badarayana means Vedavyasa, he performed austerities under the Badari tree. And then he actually begot the son Shukadeva Goswami, because he wanted one son who is actually qualified with, to whom he can actually give the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is like the ultimate conclusion. You can read in the, if you read the Prayers of Vedas Personified, that chapter in Krishna book, you can understand the six systems of philosophy.
What is the significance? Why Prabhupada is specific to?
Because in order to refute, there are different atheistic philosophies which we actually encounter in this world. They are basically just a combination of these five philosophies. So if you know these five philosophies and how to refute them, then you can refute any other wrong philosophy.
Why I am asking this is because I try to study the four sampradayas. So every sampradaya has a like combination of six system of refutation. So they, like any sampradaya you see, I have found out that they refute all the other atheistic philosophy, including these six systems. They have this.
Yeah. But because at that time, the main atheistic philosophies were from these five systems. Sixth is the theistic philosophy, Vedanta. But the other five are atheistic to some degree. They are correct to, and when you see from a limited perspective, but when you try to see from absolute perspective, they are actually atheistic. So the Vedanta philosophy, we should know how to refute these five the other atheistic philosophies, because at that time, like in all the Vaishnavacharyas, when they were present, the main atheistic philosophies were from those five. But now we have maybe different versions of that, but all of them can be, they are just a combinations of any of these atheistic philosophy. So if we know how to refute the original atheistic philosophies, then we can refuse any other combination. For example, Mayavad. You may not see a pure Mayavad now, but you may see a watered down Mayavad. Even in the form of the, this positive thinkers and all, there the different courses on positive thinkers, sometimes people say that, oh, you don't have to feel guilty for what you are doing. You are ultimately good. So they may not use any Vedic terms. During the Vedic culture, they used to take verses from the Vedanta Sutra and interpret, give a Mayavadic interpretation. Now in the modern world, people, they don't use any Vedic verses, but they speak in a way which feels good to people. Like there are certain institutions, they actually they give such seminars which actually encourage people, but actually there is the Mayavad is there. Like in one particular temple, there was some group of people, they wanted to actually attend some certain counseling session of one particular organization. So they said, they are actually doing very nice counseling session, maybe if we take help of them, then we will actually become better devotees. And then they went to attend that, and then they never came back, they left actually, they left the movement. So later, Radhanath Swami Maharaj was explaining, he said, because some of these people, they give a watered down Mayavad. Mayavad was present, in the sense that they try to say, if you are doing some mistakes, you don't have to feel any guilt, you are ultimately a very good person. What you are trying to say is that you are ultimately God, God can do no harm. So like that, they are trying to give a watered down Mayavad. So Mayavad bhasha shunile hoy sarvanash. When you hear Mayavad, then everything is doomed. So that's why even when you have to take help from some outside people, like there are different modern, what do you say, that self-help people are different, positive thinking seminars, etc. Like a person has to be highly mature, like which one should be able to discriminate actually, otherwise better not hear.
So how to understand in modern perspective that verse? He was saying that this Yamima Pushpita Macha, in modern circumstances we can say that, you know, management, most of the self-help books, they are like this. They are flowery, they are very attractive, but we may get bewildered.
In this purport, this Jaimini philosophy, how does it relate to the part of regulated sense gratification?
Regulated sense gratification. So, the sense that they have some understanding of sinful activities. So, like many of these Yamini philosophy, they don't tell you to perform sinful activities, but they tell you enjoy sense gratification in a pious way. Because many of these philosophers, it's not that they are like outright atheists like we find in the Kali Yuga. They are actually pious people, but they say you continue to enjoy sense gratification in a regulated manner. For example, in this purport they say, the followers of Jaimini conclude that the transformation of knowledge does not negate its eternality. So they therefore naturally come to the path of regulated sense gratification rather than the path of renunciation. For in the state of mukti, the living entity would not have any material senses. So they feel that if you detach and then you attain liberation, you will not have any material senses. You cannot enjoy anything. That means they feel that that is like a very horrible situation. You cannot enjoy anything. So better you just continue to enjoy sense gratification in a pious manner. And they are aware of the sinful ways. So they say, they know that has to be avoided, sinful ways. But they know, they say that you just continue to enjoy pious sense gratification only. But the point is that even in the path of regulated sense gratification, you will be forced to commit mistakes, and that will inevitably lead to, just like the classic example is King Driga. And secondly, that you cannot go to any place where there is free from birth, worldly disease and death. That is the argument which Krishna is saying. So they are basically against the principle of detachment. They say that there is no need of detachment or renunciation. So in the next verse, Krishna says that we'll decide this verse. Tatrapi karmanam kartur asvatantriyam cha lakshyate boktuscha dukkha sukayo konvarto vivasham bhajet.
Although the performer of today activities desires perpetual happiness, it is clearly observed that materialistic workers are often unhappy and only occasionally satisfied, thus proving that they are not independent or in control of their destiny. When a person is always under the superior control of others, how can he expect any valuable results from his own fruitive actions?
So here he says that when a person is actually performing this path of following this path of pious sense gratification, the path of karma, then we see that a person experiences happiness and also distress. So the fact that he is also experiencing distress, that shows that he is not independent, he is under the control of somebody. So then when a person is under the control of somebody, that means he is in a helpless situation, then how can a person actually, like, what valuable results can actually result when a person is actually in a helpless situation, when a person is under the control of somebody because of following the fruitive actions. So the same point which Prabhupada writes in the purport, if for example, I wanted to mention, the 17th verse, na? Like for example, Prabhupada says that invention of automobiles. So when a person is driving a car, but with limited control, then it will definitely actually meet with some accident. So similarly, the person is following the path of karma, and the person is actually is not in control, he is dependent on somebody, so definitely he will meet with some reversals in his life. So next verse. The next verse Krishna says, that Lord completely refutes the idea that simply by material piety one can achieve happiness, because we see that, like, sometimes intelligent people who are performing the, who are leading a pious way of life, still they also undergo distress, and sometimes even, like, foolish people, they are also, who are actually performing the sinful way of life, sometimes they are also happy. Like sometimes those who are leading a pious way of life, they are also in distress. Sometimes those who are actually leading a sinful way of life, they are also sometimes happy. So in that sense, like Lord completely refutes the idea that simply by material piety one can achieve happiness. Because even those who are leading a pious way of life, sometimes they also undergo distress. And those who are living a sinful way of life, they are also sometimes happy. So basically the material world is created in such a way that even if a person is leading simply a pious way of life, it will force a person to commit some sinful activities. One cannot avoid sinful activities. And even if a person is only engaging in sinful activities, sometimes he will also end up doing some pious activity. So that is how the material world is created like that. So therefore he says that vrita ahankaranam param. It's like only people who are falsely proud, they claim that one can always be happy by performing karmas. Only those who are falsely proud, they say that you simply be a good person, simply be a, like, sometimes people say that be good, do good, work, just perform your duty, do a good way of life. The point is that even if you are simply doing good to others, you cannot avoid sinful activity. The classic example is King Driga. Like, he ended up in a problem. Like, he was doing, if you read that story, that he was, like, the amount of cows he gave in charity, it can't be counted. You can even count the number of particles in a sand particles, but you cannot count the number of cows he gave in charity to others. but still he ended up displeasing some brahmanas, and then when he was asked that do you want to enjoy the pious reaction or the sinful reaction, so then he said that I want to first enjoy the sinful reaction, because if I am enjoying the pious result, then I'll always be remembering that okay, and the sinful reactions will come later, so that will make me miserable. But then he wanted to enjoy the sinful. He thought that I will not have actually I have not performed any sin. I will not have anything to. But then he had to become a lizard for so many years. So in that sense, like simply doing good, be good, that will not actually. That is not a sound philosophy. One will actually inevitably. I'll just come late. One will inevitably commit some mistakes. So therefore, only who are falsely proud can always be happy. Will claim that one can always be happy by performing karma. So there is a verse in the Yamadutas are speaking to Vishnudutas. So they say, Sambhavantihi Badrani Viparitani Chanaga Karinam Guna Sangosti Dehavan Nahya Karma Krit. So they are saying that inhabitants of Vaikuntha, you are sinless. But those within this material world are all karmis, whether acting piously or impiously. Both kinds of action are possible for them because they are contaminated with the three modes of nature and must act accordingly. So then they are saying that one who has accepted a material body cannot be active, and sinful action is inevitable for a person acting under the modes of nature. Any person who is under the modes of nature, like somebody who is saying do good, be good, he is maybe under the mode of goodness, but he is under the modes of nature. So what Yamadutas are saying, that any person who is under the modes of nature, for him sinful action is inevitable. So Vishnudutas' question is that Vishnudutas are asking, who are the candidates for punishment? Are everyone supposed to be punished? Who are the candidates for punishment? So Yamadutta's conclusion is that all living entities within the material world are punishable. So like anybody who is under the three modes of nature, even if he is in the mode of goodness, he will be punishable because one will be forced to commit some sinful activity. So that is what Krishna is actually dealing with in this verse. So in the next verse Krishna says, okay, suppose if a person knows how to achieve happiness by the pious way of life and how to avoid distress by avoiding the sins. Even if a person knows this, but still death, one will not be able to actually avoid death. Even if you know like what is the pious way of life, if you are only trying to do, of course, previous verse he talked about the sinful activities are inevitable, but he said even if a person knows that only the pious way of life and how to avoid distress, but still a person cannot avoid death. Death will not be able to, they still do not know the process by which death will not be able to exert its power over them. They do not know how to actually avoid death. They do not know the process of avoiding death. So here, Hridayananda Maharaj talks about how the scientists are busily working to solve this problem, but since they have completely failed, it is understood that they are not actually intelligent and that they do not know the means of achieving happiness and eliminating misery. So we should not blindly ignore the disaster of material life, but should instead accept the Lord's causeless mercy, which is so magnanimously offers in his incarnation as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then in the 20th verse he says that, this is a very important verse, we will recite this verse. Konvarta sukha yatyenam kamova mrityurantike agatam niya manasya vadya sevana tushtida.
Death is not account pleasing, and since everyone is exactly like a condemned man being led to the place of execution, what possible happiness can people derive from material objects or the gratification they provide?
So here he is saying that when death is not at all pleasing to a person, when death can come to a person any time, then how can a person actually enjoy a peaceful life? So Hridayan Maharaj writes a very brilliant purport here. Says that like sometimes like, when a person is like a criminal is supposed to be hanged, so before he is hanged, he would be given a very sumptuous meal. So, but that sumptuous meal is a chilling reminder that oh, he is going to be hanged. So, when suppose the day he is getting say chappan bhog, so will he be able to enjoy that? Because that is actually a reminder for him that I am going to be hanged in few hours. So nobody can enjoy that sumptuous meal because he is aware that he is going to be hanged. So what he is trying to say is that every living entity in this world is in that condition. Because every person is in the right disposition, he knows that death can come at any time. So how can a person actually enjoy sense gratification in this life? So therefore he says that just like suppose if a person is sitting in a TV room and nice foodstuffs are there and nice air condition, all the facilities are there, but there is a cobra next to him. So will he be able to enjoy the TV show? So he says that unless one is more or less crazy, one cannot be enthusiastic or even peaceful in material life. Unless a person is more or less crazy, one cannot be enthusiastic or even peaceful in material life. Knowledge of the inevitability of death should encourage one to become determined in spiritual life. In that sense, as Prabhupada mentioned once, like Krishna consciousness means keeping always death in the forefront. Like we have to always remember that death can come at any time. So till the 20th verse, Krishna talked about the pious way of enjoying sense gratification in this world. Pious way of enjoying sense gratification in this world. But now 21st to 26th verse is going to talk about enjoying sense gratification in the heavenly planets. But I want to take a certain section of this one, that's why I will take questions during the break. So, because we had to, our original plan was to take one chapter a week. So 21st to 26th verse, Krishna talks about heavenly happiness. So these are actually similar to the like, for example, the material happiness which we see in this world, that we are able to see, but the heavenly happiness is something which you only hear in the scriptures. Therefore Krishna uses the word shrutam cha. So we'll recite this verse. Shrutam cha drishtavaddushtam sparda suyatya yavyayai bhagvantaraya kamatvat krishivat chapi nishphalam.
That material happiness of which we hear, such as promotion to heavenly planets for celestial enjoyment, is just like that material happiness we have already experienced. Both are polluted by jealousy, envy, decay and death. Therefore, just as an attempt to raise crops becomes fruitless if there are many problems like crop disease, insect plague or drought, similarly the attempt to attain material happiness either on earth or on the heavenly planets is always fruitless because of innumerable obstacles.
So here he is talking about, now that the next topic starts, like the same theme, but he is talking about material happiness in the heaven. So he is mentioning three characteristics of heavenly happiness. First is that it is contaminated like in earth. Shrutam cha drishtavat. Drishtavat is something which we see, happiness in earth. But that which we hear about the happiness in heavenly planets, that is also contaminated like the happiness you see here. Like sometimes we when we talk about heavenly happiness, in Kali Yuga setting, we can, most people don't believe in heaven. So we can say it is like happiness in America, other countries. So we can say like, what is there available there, it is also contaminated like what we see in India. So then the second characteristic is that Sparda Asuya Atyaya Vyaya. It is polluted by envy, jealousy, decay and death. That means like even in the heavenly happiness, there also there will be envy between people, there will be competition, and it will be subject to destruction, and ultimately a person has to die. And the third characteristic is that the attempt to get heavenly happiness is also filled with difficulties. Not only the attempt is filled with difficulties, sometimes even though you put so much of effort, there will not be any results. Just like the example is given as farming. So we may not have any experience of farming, but the example which is given is that farming, is like sometimes a person works hard for farming, but the attempt itself is filled with difficulties. He has to like take care of the weeds, and he has to take care of the other animals from entering the land, and like sometimes there is untimely rain. So the attempt is filled with difficulties, and then even if a person puts proper effort, sometimes there will not be any result because of these obstacles. So that is how this analogy is given. And then from the next five verses, he is basically trying to say how a person cannot eliminate the suffering simply by obtaining heavenly happiness. So that is the theme of till the 26th verse. The 22nd verse he says that if a person performs Vedic sacrifice and fruitive results without any mistake or contamination, one will achieve a heavenly situation in the next life. But even this result, which is only achieved by perfect performance of fruitive results, will be vanquished by time. Means like heavenly situation is also, it is not eternal, it will be vanquished by time. Now hear of this. So he says that when a person performs sacrifice, he goes to heaven, there he enjoys like a devata by his pious activities. And then he explains that so there he travels with in a beautiful glowing airplane surrounded by Gandharvas and beautiful women, and in nice clothes he enjoys life surrounded by different people. And then such a person enjoys the fruits of sacrifice in a wonderful airplane which is decorated with circles of tinkling bells, etc. And he is in a very relaxed, comfortable situation. But such a person does not consider that he is exhausting the fruits of his piety and will soon fall down to the mortal world. So then in the 22nd, 26th verse, we will recite that verse. Tavat samodate svarge yavat punyam samapyate shina punya patatyarvak anichyan kala chalitaha.
Until his pious results are used up, the performer of sacrifice enjoys life in the heavenly country. When the pious results are exhausted, however, he falls down from the pleasure gardens of heaven, being moved against his desire by the force of eternal time.
So when his pious results are over, then Shrine Punye Martya Lokam Vishanti actually comes down here. So 21st to 26th verses, Krishna talks about how the heavenly sense enjoyment is actually fruitless. Till the 20th verse, he has talked about pious way of sense enjoyment in this world. And he talked about heavenly happiness in the next 6 verses. Now the theme shifts from 27th verse. So from the 27th verse, he talks about the path of unauthorized or demoniac sense gratification. So the pious way of sense gratification, he divided into 2 topics. Pious way of sense gratification in this world and in the heavenly happiness. So now sense gratification by not following the scriptures. So that he explains from the 27th verse. You can read the translation. 20, we'll decide this. You can read the translation, 27th verse.
If a human being is engaged in sinful irreligious activities, either because of bad association or because of his failure to control his senses, then such a person will certainly develop a personality full of material desire. He thus becomes miserly towards others, greedy and always anxious to exploit the moorings of men. When the mind is so polluted, one becomes violent and aggressive, and without the authority of Vedic injunctions, slaughters innocent animals for sense gratification. Worshipping ghosts and spirits, the bewildered person falls fully into the grip of unorganized activities and thus goes to hell, where he receives a material body infected by the darkest modes of nature. In such a degraded body, he unfortunately continues to perform inauspicious activities that greatly increase his future unhappiness, and therefore he again accepts a similar material body. What possible happiness can there be for one who engages in activities inevitably terminating in death?
So here, the path of unauthorized sense gratification. So why a person indulges in sinful activities? Because of two reasons. One is either because of bad association, or secondly, a person may be in good association, but because of failing to control the senses, a person indulges sinful activities. So then, such a person, like a kamatma kripano lubdha, such a person becomes kamatma, full of desires. Kripano, he becomes miserable. Lubdha, he becomes greedy for pleasure. Straino, he becomes attached to women. And bhuta vihimsakaha, he actually becomes violent towards other living entities. And what else he do? Pashun avidina labhya, he kills animals without following the rules. Preta bhuta ganan, he worships the ghosts and spirits. Narakan avasho jantur, he definitely goes to hell, and avasho, that means like against his will. And Vishnu Chakotaku says, such a person, jantu means he attains the body of a plant. It's like those living entities who are actually in the body of a plants and trees, they are actually, because they have followed the path of unauthorized sense gratification, they actually obtained that form. That's what he said. And then karmani dukko darkani, so by his body he performs actions which create future suffering, dukko adarkani, and attains another body by these actions. So then finally he says, kim sukam martya dharminaha, how can a person with a body leading to death attain happiness in that body? So in this purport, actually this comes in the next verse translation, it comes, but then the purport itself Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur mentions. He says that Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur has noted that material life is so disturbing that even if one is allowed to live for an entire day of Brahma, approximately 864 followed by 70, that many years, still one will be eventually be afflicted by the fear of death. So in fact Brahma himself is disturbed by fear of death. What to speak of tiny human beings who live a paltry 70 or 80 years. So next verse, we'll recite this next verse. Lokanam lokapalanam matvayam kalpa jivinam brahmanopipayam matto dviparardha parayushah.
All the planetary system from the heavenly to the hellish, and for all the great demigods living for 1000 year cycles, there is a fear of me in my form of time. Even Brahma, who possesses a supreme lifespan of 311,000 years, is only a fear of this.
So here this is a Like this was, we have to actually contemplate upon. Even Brahma, who has such a long lifespan, is also afraid of death. So there is a verse in the Rudra Gita which says that Atatvam Asino Brahman Paramatman Vipaschitam Vishvam Rudra Bhayadvastam Akutaschit Bhayagatihi. Although the entire universe is afraid of Lord Rudra, so Rudra is responsible for like annihilation. There are 13 Rudras, I guess. And ultimately annihilates everything. Entire universe is afraid of Rudra, but still even one Rudra is also afraid of another Rudra. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that since the fear principle is actually pervading everywhere, even one Rudra is afraid of another Rudra. So we will take a 5 minutes break, and then meanwhile if somebody has any questions, okay, during this 5 minutes.
Verse 30. It says that all demigods,
great
demigods, live for 1,000
yuga cycles. Even the great demigods. Okay.
Live for 1,000 yuga cycles. Generally, we see that they change their position. Does that mean they die or they continue to live, but they change their position?
The great demigods. Like, no, no, exactly. Like, yeah, Indra usually has a one manvantara, whether it will change. Description is there in the fifth canto, but then if you see the conclusion, read that. Like, for example, so the Bhagavatam principle is that like you remove the thorn with the help of a thorn. So people want to hear nice description, so they are also given. At the end, it is mentioned. Ultimately, how it is temporary, etc. Abhrama Bhuvana, like this theme comes again and again. Like for
and also it is possible.
I'm sure, like in the sense, like there may be the description, but it's never mentioned that those places are actually eternal, isn't it? Like if, when a person goes there, I don't think it's ever mentioned in the Bhagavatam that it's eternal. When there is a Purana has to have descriptive elements also. Should have nice phrases and all that descriptive element. So, like for example, if you read the story of Agnidra and Purvachitti, there is some very graphic description of the bodily features, etc. So that is because Bhagavatam wants to attract the mind of the materialistic people. And after attracting them, it's like, as I mentioned, like you remove the thorn with the help of a thorn. So their mind is actually filled with material subject matters. So you also attract them by giving similar subject matter. And then if you read the conclusion of the story, how Agnidra and Purvachitti left, and then he was completely miserable, and so conclusion is that it completely actually how anything in the material world is actually temporary and miserable. So that is how actually the Bhagavatam tries to attract the mind of a person in order to remove the disease.
The Bhagavatam Bhagavatam is giving some good description of the heavenly planet, it is also later on giving the distress of the demigods.
Huh.
You know, when Indra offended Brihaspati and the Venus
mm-hmm.
of past time, how they also ran here and there, displaced from their position.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's giving a balanced view. Good things are there, but then these things also happen
mm-hmm.
to the demigods. Ultimately, they take shelter of.
Mm-hmm. The whole planetary systems, the conclusion of the planetary systems, how the, all the planetary systems are actually moving around Dhruvaloka. Dhruvaloka. So that Prabhupada writes here that Krishna has made Dhruva Maharaj as the most important personality in the whole universe. And that all the planets are moving around him. In that sense, the conclusion of the section is that how the devotional service makes a person so powerful, he becomes the most important personality in the whole universe.
What exactly is the, this is the term atheistic philosophy, atheistic philosophy. I mean, what is
the atheistic philosophy, that means like not accepting the presence of God. It can be, one is that there are different flavors of, one is like not accepting the presence of God, and somebody may say that I believe in God but they don't accept Vedas. That is also an atheistic philosophy. So like when you don't,
means they are mostly agnostic little bit.
Like there will be another flavor is like they accept, okay, God is there, but then they don't give full control to the God. They say the world is actually going on automatically by their laws. If you do good, you have to get good reaction. Only they don't. They try to say that God is not in control of this laws. He just made the laws, it is just good. So even they may accept God, but then because of
accepting a controlling authority.
Not because of having the idea that God is not in full control of this world, still that is also atheistic. And somebody may accept God but not accept the Vedas. The Buddhists, they actually rejected the Vedas in atheistic philosophy. They may have some principles of non-violence, freedom from desire, certain these things.
They believe in existence of creator,
Deism. But they don't accept the Vedas. So they are called as atheistic.
In the first verse, the last sentence is the practice of, we should practice the social and occupational system called Varnashram. See, as we discussed last time, sometimes this social practice, like there is Radhashtami and there is some Ganpati Visarjan on the same day. So as for this, some social custom, they may contradict each other. So why? Here it is
Christian
that we should follow
this Varnashram. See, in the first verse purport mentioned that we should perform the, there are innumerable rules and regulations in the Varnashram duties, but we should follow those rules which do not contradict the.
Right. So those contradict, you have to follow this.
Which is contradicting, then we have to reject that.
We have to reject.
So the primary, that's why the first verse is Krishna is saying after the shelter should be not in Varnashram, shelter should be in Krishna. Basically Varnashram is a way of our lifestyle. The goal is actually pure devotional service, but we cannot act on the platform of pure devotional service. We have to lead the lifestyle based on Varnashram. Yesterday we will discuss in more detail when we come to the section on Varnashram, but this I want to mention right now, because there are Prabhupada has talked about Varnashram in four different ways: Daivi Varnashram, materialistic Varnashram, and Vedic Varnashram, and dormant Varnashram. And in three different periods Prabhupada has given different statements in different mood about Varnashram. The first, in the initial years of his establishing ISKCON, 1966-72, he focused only on hearing and chanting, and then afterwards he gave more emphasis to Varnashram for the sake of preaching. And then that towards the end he said that Varnashram is a must for all the devotees in order to sustain in Krishna consciousness. So first he said that only to actually Varnashram, it's not possible to establish Varnashram, just concentrate on hearing and chanting, and that is the way. And then later part he said that Varnashram is important for preaching. And then the third phase he said, it is a must even for the devotees in order to survive, because he saw that many sannyasis, many disciples were actually falling down. So because there was no social stability. So in order to practice spiritual life sustainably, you need a stability on the material platform. So that is what Varnashram is. If you have to go to the, I give that example, if you have to go to the, say, first floor, you need a staircase to go to that. You cannot directly jump from the ground floor to first floor. Or you need a lift. So that staircase is like the Varnashram, like the bridge. In order to hold the essence of Krishna consciousness, you need a container. If you are giving water to somebody, you don't throw the water. Along with the water comes the container. So the container which is supposed to hold this Krishna consciousness is actually Varnashram.
You can say it is a tool of devotional
service. Huh? It's not a tool, it is like a way of life, lifestyle. It is like a container which is supposed to hold. It is like a staircase which is supposed to, it is like a bridge which connects from Sakama Bhakti to pure devotional service. We are not in the stage of pure devotional service. We are not in order to go there. We need the bridge of Varnash.
So that's the way of life.
Yeah. Like Mahaprabhu, when he was hearing the song of Devadasi, some Devadasis were singing some songs about Krishna. So Mahaprabhu, he went into ecstasy, he started running after that direction, running towards the direction from which the sound was coming in order to embrace that person. And then Govinda somehow stopped. Do you know like what you are going to do? You are actually hearing the song sung by some Devadasi lady, and you are going to embrace that lady. So Mahaprabhu said, oh, today you have saved my life. Huh. If I had done that, I would have to commit suicide like that. So that means, what was he meant? Like he wanted to practice the principles of a sannyasi. His goal is actually Krishna Prem, but he was demonstrating how, as a sannyasi, he is supposed to follow a certain code of conduct. The same way, our goal is pure devotional service, but according to a situation in this world, brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, it is supposed to be a particular way of life. So that is what he was demonstrating. So he rejected Varnashram as the goal, but not as a lifestyle. So that is to be actually clear.
What is, Guru Maharaj, it is mentioned that when you continue to rule, he was exhausting the
credits
of his pious and
what
does it mean?
No, Dhruva Maharaj, in that purport, 4th canto, 12th chapter, was thinking that he wanted to perform austerities in order to exhaust the results of his pious activities and in order to exhaust the results of the reactions of the sinful activities. So what Dhruva Maharaj was feeling is that actually is humility. Krishna Chakotako say, like every person has got a, unless our past karma is gone, either pious karma or sinful karma, then we cannot actually stop the cycle of birth and death. So one has to exhaust all one's karma, both pious and sinful. So in order to exhaust that, he was performing some austerities. But actually, Krishna Chakotakur says that actually Dhruva Maharaj is a pure devotee. He doesn't have any karma in his stock. So it is the devotional service, the devotional service of Dhruva Maharaj made him humble. Because of his humility, he was thinking that, oh, I have to exhaust my pious karma and sinful karma. So the result of devotional service is that a person becomes humble. So when a person feels humble, when a person is actually humble, he feels that he doesn't think himself to be a special person. So when a person thinks himself to be a special person, he feels that, oh, all my karmas are gone, I am already a devotee. So, but actually a humble person feels that, oh, no, I must be having so much of sinful karma, pious karma, like. So he wants to put extra endeavor to actually perform devotional service, do that. Huh? So Dhruva Maharaj, Vishnu Chakravarti said that it is the humility which resulted from the practice of devotional service which made him think that, oh, I have to exhaust my pious and sinful karma. So therefore he was performing austerity.
So
yeah, beautiful statement last week. So. So we'll go through a little. So now 31st verse onwards, the 31st verse. So here, the 31st verse, Krishna talks about the nature of living entities' dependence on fruitive activities. So what he says in this verse is that the material senses create material activities. Guna, material senses, here guna refers to material senses. Srijanti karmani, material senses create material activities with results which can be either pious or sinful. And the material, the modes of nature, they set the material senses into motion. So because of the influence of the three modes, the material senses become active. And when the material senses are active, a person performs material activities either pious or sinful. And who ultimately enjoys the result? The living entity. Jivastu guna samyuktu bhunkte karma phalanyasav. The living entity enjoys the results, the pious or sinful. So one may say, if the three modes of material nature, if they are setting the material senses into motion and which create the material activities, why should the living entity suffer or enjoy? Ultimately, the modes of material nature are actually setting things into motion. The reason is that because the living entity chooses to associate with the three modes of nature. He makes that choice to come under the goodness, passion or ignorance. So because of that, he is the primary doer. Therefore, he is actually supposed to, just like when you are going in a taxi, you are not driving the car. But you are telling the driver, you take me to Grand Road. In that sense, you are the primary doer, the driver taking you to Grand Road. You cannot say that, oh, why did you bring me to Grand Road? I didn't actually come to Grand Road. No, you are the primary doer because you chose to actually tell him. The same way, living entity chose to accept the three modes of material nature. Therefore, he enjoys the results. And the 32nd verse, he says, okay, how long does the living entity have to accept various bodies? How long does he have to accept, go through the cycle of birth and death? He says that as long as a person acts through his material senses, as long as a person thinks, thinks that this world has a separate existence from the Supreme Lord, as long as a person is not in Krishna consciousness, or as long as a person has a separatist vision, Hridayan Maharaj writes in the purport that everything is, a pure devotee of Krishna sees everywhere and sees all of the variegated modes of nature as the potency of Krishna. But one who does not see Krishna will certainly see material variegatedness as the supreme reality. So one who does not see Krishna, he sees the material variegatedness as the supreme reality, and such vision is called Maya. So as long as a person has that vision, he has to actually undergo get different bodies and take birth and die. And then the 33rd verse Krishna says, and the result of being dependent on that karma, so the 32nd verse concludes by saying paratantriyam means dependence. So the living entity remains completely dependent on fruitive activities under the modes of nature. He becomes dependent on his karma. So the 33rd verse Krishna says, the result of being dependent on karma is that tavad ishvarato bayam, he will fear the controller of karma. When a person is simply engaged in pious or sinful activities, he will always be fearful about the controller of karma. And then he says, ya etat samupashiram ste muhyanti shucharpita, those who take shelter of fruitive acts, they will be muhyanti, they will be bewildered and subject to lamentation. So here also again a beautiful purport Hridayan Maharaj writes. Like sometimes one may say, actually when a living entity is not in contact with Krishna, he definitely experiences misery. But then we see in this world many people are not in contact with Krishna, but they don't seem to be experiencing misery, they seem to be in bliss. So how do we understand this?
A good Brahmana is learning from a fool. That is ignorant. Ignorant child. That is why there are two kinds of people in heaven. One is Paramahansa and one is foolish.
Because of his past good karma. And the Lord does not immediately take away all the good
ones.
Then later on, but he has to face the reaction.
Uh-huh.
Ignorant. Like
anesthesia. Anesthesia. Yeah.
Anesthesia, you don't feel pain.
Yeah. Just like when a person is when a person is undergoing a surgery, he is actually feeling pain only.
Yeah,
but because of anesthesia, he is not feeling the pain. So what is acting as an anesthesia for the materialist is that because the happiness which he gets from sense gratification for some time, that is acting like an anesthesia for him. Or that hope of getting that is acting like an anesthesia for him. So because of it, he is not able to feel the pain of not being connected with Krishna. Either the material pleasure or the hope of getting material pleasure. Acting like anesthesia.
In a village, there is a big called koti. This is a crane they put on the top. And they, from down they remove the last year's crane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all these answers are good. So in that sense, Hridayan Maharaj says that as a person grows older, one's life becomes filled with fear and anxiety. Because when a person grows old, there is no possibility of enjoying the body actually. So then he is actually faced with only miseries in his life. Then he person becomes more fearful and he becomes anxious. So then the 34th verse Krishna, the 34th verse, he is concluding this section, and then the last three verses contain questions of Uddhava. The 34th verse Krishna says, Krishna talks about how when a person is agitated by the three modes of nature, he becomes subjected to different forms of Maya. So what are the different forms of Maya which people accept? What are the different forms of illusion which people accept because of being agitated by the modes? So that is explained in the 34th verse. You can read the translation, 34th verse.
When there is the agitation and interaction of the material modes of nature, The living entities then describe me in various ways, such as all powerful time, the self, Vedic knowledge, the universe, one's own nature, religious ceremonies, and so on.
So what does it mean is like, when people who are agitated by three modes of nature, they accept different forms of Maya, in the sense that they accept, they are focused on the time of enjoyment, they are thinking about only the time of enjoyment, or they accept the, they are thinking about the heavenly planets, they think, they feel that that is the only reality, they accept their or they accept, they are only focused on those scriptures which proclaim, which talk about fruitive activities. Agama here refers to scriptures. So they are only focused on those scriptures which talk about this going to heaven, etc. So these are the different forms of, I take on various forms of, when there is agitation and interaction of the modes of nature, I take on various forms of Maya. At the time of enjoyment, the body suitable for enjoyment, at the scriptures proclaiming karma, at the places giving enjoyment, etc. So this way Krishna concludes this section on the nature of fruitive activity. So the, next week this question will be there, this answer, the whole overview of this chapter, summary of this chapter, in brief you have to write. So now the 35th to 37th verse, Uddhava, the last three verses, Uddhava is asking two questions essentially. One question in the 35th verse and another question in the 36th and 37th verse. The 35th verse, the question which Uddhava is asking is that, how did the liberated soul get bound up in this body? How did the, his question is that, his question is in one sense twofold here. He says that sometimes we see liberated souls, they are also performing activities like evacuating, eating, sleeping, etc. If the soul is, if that person is already liberated, then why is he performing activities on the material platform? Says that even though Dattatreya and Bharata were liberated, still they maintained gross and subtle bodies, since we hear that they also ate, slept, and they also walked about. If that is so, why is such a living entity also not bound by the gunas, since he exists within the gunas of his body? The question is that if a person is already liberated, then why is he still performing apparently activities like a person on the material platform is also like maybe we see even Prabhupada also when he grew old, he was also like dizzy, like different, he was also having symptoms of a diseased person. With a liberated person, why is he actually acting, performing activities on the material platform? And then he says, but if you say, if somebody is saying, but the living entity Jiva is like a sky, like a ether, which is completely untouched, like ether is there everywhere, but it is untouched by everything. If the living entity is, if you say, if you are saying that living entity is like a ether, which is untouched by anything, then the bondage should not have occurred at all. Then how did the living entity get bound up in this body? So this is basically about how the liberated soul is actually, why is the liberated soul apparently performing activities in the material platform, or how did the living entity get bound up in this material body? Question about the fall down of the jiva. And then the 36th and 37th verse, Uddhava is saying, here the question is that he is asking about the symptoms of a liberated soul. So he says that a liberated soul and a person who is bound in this world both appear to be acting in the same way. Both are, they are also eating, liberated soul is also eating, bound up soul is also eating, both are sleeping. Even a liberated soul may also have a family, wife, children, etc. the bound up soul also may have. If both are actually appear to be same, then how do we know, how do we, like, what are the symptoms by which we can understand the actually liberated soul? So then he says that, oh Krishna, you are the best among all those people who can give answers to the question. Prashnam Prashna Vidam Vara. That means, Prashna Vidam. You are the best of those who are expert in answering philosophical questions. So therefore, please explain the symptoms by which we can understand the liberated souls. So these three questions, these two, these questions asked in these three verses, that becomes like a driving factor for the next chapter. So we'll start the next chapter also. So next chapter is entered, the whole Uddhava Gita is actually philosophical only. We have to then patiently just go through it. There are no unlike stories like other cantos. So 11th chapter is entitled the symptoms of living entities. So in this chapter contains essentially three topics: the difference between the liberated and the conditioned living entity. Because that is like nonsense question was asked. And second is qualities of the devotee, or qualities of a liberated soul, we can say, qualities of the devotee. And third topic is the different angas of bhakti. The different angas of bhakti. These are the three topics of the 11th chapter. So we'll start with the first verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Baddha Mukta Iti Vyakya Gunato Mena Vastutaha Gunasya Maya Mulatvan Name Mokshona Bandhanam.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, due to the influence of material modes of nature which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated. And since I am the Supreme Lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I also am never to be considered liberated or in bondage.
So here, so Uddhava asked about the difference between the conditioned and the liberated soul. What are symptoms of a liberated soul? So Krishna is saying that actually one cannot actually say that there is bondage or liberation due to the gunas controlled by me. Because the relationship with the gunas arises only by avidya or ignorance, there is no real bondage and consequently no liberation. That is my opinion. It's like another translation of this verse. What Hridayan Maharaj says that Krishna is saying the three modes of material nature are under my control. Because these three modes of material nature, they are designating, oh, this person is conditioned, or this person is liberated. But truly speaking, the living entities can never be said to be conditioned or liberated. It is the three modes of material nature which is giving the designation, oh, this person is conditioned, this person is liberated. But truly speaking, we can never, this living entity is neither conditioned nor liberated. In one sense, he is always pure, in the sense. So just like I remain unchanged as the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Master of all potencies. Similarly, truly speaking, the living entity is neither conditioned nor liberated. But because he comes under the control of the three modes of material nature, so he becomes designated as eternally conditioned or eternally liberated. So that is the essence of Krishna's answer. So there is a very long purport. You can actually go through the purport. But in essence, Krishna says, some of the few points from the purport I will just read out. Lord Krishna reveals that in one sense, the living entity is factually not bound up. Therefore, thus cannot be liberated. The soul in one sense. But in another sense, the terms bondage and liberation can be conveniently applied to indicate the particular situation of the individual soul who is a marginal potency of the Lord. Although the individual soul is never actually bound to matter, he suffers the reactions of material nature because of false identification, and thus the term baddha or bound up may be used to indicate the nature of a living entity's experience within the inferior energy of the Lord. So basically, in one sense, the living entity cannot be said as bound up or liberated. So it is because of the false identification with the three modes of nature, we can give the designation of who is bound up now and is liberated now. That is what actually Krishna is trying to say. The terms liberation and bondage, in the case of the Supreme Lord, it can never be applied. The Supreme Lord never comes under the control of three modes of nature. But in the case of a living entity, because he identifies with the three modes of nature, he becomes, can be termed as bound up, sometimes liberated. There are a few very beautiful points. The next verses, I will go through the next verse. The next verse, Krishna explains how this bondage is illusory. How the bondage and the three modes, how it is actually illusory. Shoka mohau sukam dukkam deha patischa mayaya svapno yatatmana kyati samskritir natu vastavi. A simple example of a dream. Dream is simply a creation of a person's intelligence. Dream actually has no substance. So similarly, we go through different emotions of lamentation or illusion or happiness or distress and are leaving one body to take up another body. All these things take place by the avidya potency and they are not based on reality. So basically the bondage which we see in this world, because of the bondage a person experiences, lamentation, illusion, accepting one body to another body, this all actually, this is not reality, it is actually illusory. Just like dream is actually just, dream has no substance, it is just a creation of the intelligence. It has no actual substance. So in the next verse, Krishna says, what is that avidya by which the living entity develops a false relationship? So what is that avidya by which living entity develops this false relationship? So that avidya is also a potency of the Lord. What is that avidya? That avidya is a potency of the Lord. Can you read the translation? Next verse. So avidya and vidya both are Krishna's energy. By avidya a person actually becomes bound up, and by vidya potency a person becomes liberated. So that's what Krishna says. Both are his potencies. So here, there is many different technical things are there, but Madhvacharya in this purport he says vidya refers to Lakshmi Devi and avidya refers to Durga. He gives that additional point here. And another thing, like in this verse it is explained that moksha bandha kari adye means what? original or beginningless. So what he is trying to say is that by Adye, bondage and liberation are not temporary states, but they are eternal options for the living entity. So that is why the term Adye is used. If a person chooses to come under the modes of material nature, then he becomes like a Nitya Baddha. He will be eternally conditioned. So we'll just come to that point of, like, there is very very beautiful point in the next verse purport. I'll explain that. In this verse, what is moksha bandha kari adye? Both knowledge and ignorance are beginningless and perpetually award liberation and bondage to embodied living beings. Perpetually award. That means bondage and liberation, they are not temporary state, they are eternal options. If you choose to come under the modes of material nature, then you become eternally conditioned. And if you choose to perform devotional service, you become eternally liberated. So that is what he says here. So we'll go to the next verse. Ekasyaiva mamamshasya jivasyaiva mahamate bandho asya avidyayan bandhosya vidyaya vidyayanadir vidyayacha tatetara.
O most intelligent Kutva, the living entity called Jiva is part and parcel of me. But due to ignorance, he has been suffering in material bondage since time immemorial. By knowledge, however, he can be liberated.
So here he is saying that Mama Amshasya, the living entity, is my Amsha. So Vishnu Chakotakur says that even Garbhodakshai Vishnu is also Krishna's Amsha. But living entity is a separated energy of the Lord, but Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is actually Vishnu Tattva, it is Swamsha, it's eternal. Though the Jiva is my Shakti, the nature of Samsha should be understood from this statement. And then he says that although he is using the word Eka, Eka means Ekasyaiva, of the one Jiva, the living entity called Jiva, actually there are innumerable living entities, but he just make, you know, all the living entities one category, so therefore he is using the, that's why he is using the word Eka. Although there are many Jivas. And especially, now the important point, in the last paragraph on the purport, so this is something we have to understand. When we talk about this concept of Nitya Mukta and Nitya Baddha, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. So what he is saying is that conditioned life is beginningless. Since beginningless time, we are actually conditioned. In that sense, we are Nitya Mukta. Because conditioned life is beginningless, but it is not endless. Since time immemorial, we are conditioned. But if we choose to perform devotional service, then it comes to an end. So conditioned life is beginningless, it's a one-sided infinity. But it is not endless. And liberated life has a beginning. If you choose to perform devotional service, if you choose to surrender to Krishna, then your liberated life begins. And liberated life has a beginning, but endless. If you choose to surrender to Krishna, then it becomes endless and you eternally become liberated. So it is also a one-sided infinity. Means like it has a beginning, but it has no end, liberated life. Once you surrender to Krishna, you become actually, your liberated life begins, but it never ends, it becomes endless. In the case of a conditioned life, since time immemorial we are conditioned, so conditioned life is beginningless, but it is not endless. It is not endless. So that is what the sum and substance of the last paragraph, the purport. supreme personality of Godhead Krishna may be understood to be eternally liberated, since such a person has entered into the eternal atmosphere of the spiritual sky. Says that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that that his liberated life begins at a certain point but is endless, because liberated life is understood to be eternal. In any case, one who has achieved the shelter of the Supreme Lord may be understood to be eternally liberated, since such a person has entered into the eternal atmosphere of the spiritual sky. Sometimes we say, though, are you a Nitya Siddha devotee or a I want to surrender only to the Nitya Siddha, only that kind of a spiritual master. I don't want a Sadhana Siddha. But according to this, okay, a person has become attained perfection by Sadhana, but now he is as good as a Nitya Siddha, because he is like, his liberated life is endless. His liberated life had a beginning, but then because he has surrendered to Krishna, it has no end. So there is no harm in taking instruction only from a sadhana siddha. It's as good as actually Nitya Siddha in that sense.
Who is on the sadhana?
Who is
the sadhana? Who is on the sadhana?
They are on the liberated path. See, this is like a, we can say, suppose I give a check, you deposit this check after 10 years and you will get say 10,000 rupees. So in one sense, you practically have 10,000 rupees with you. But right now you don't have. So because, in that sense, because you are taken to devotional service, in one sense you are liberated. But still, it becomes to, in order to become fully manifest, one later purport will say that even a liberated soul should be humble and you should never think himself to be liberated. one later purport comes. So in one sense, Prabhupada would say, how many liberated souls are, how many devotees are there? So 5,000, so all are liberated souls, he would say.
What difference it makes if I was always rich or if I have become rich?
What difference if a person has inherited the property from the father or he has earned and then become a billionaire or something? What's the
example? The example of bathing also is given. Even though the dirt might be there, the person has entered the
So just few more verses. Fifth verse. Can you read the translation? Fifth verse.
Somebody read the translation.
Thus, my dear Uddhava, in the same material body, we find opposing characteristics such as great happiness and misery. That is because both the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally liberated, as well as the conditioned soul are within the body. I shall now speak to you about their different characteristics.
You can just go and check whether the fun school is there today. So just a few minutes earlier. So in this verse, now from verse number 5 to 7, verse number 5 to 7, he talks about the difference between the conditioned soul and Paramatma. So there is Nitya Baddha and Nitya Mukta, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. And in the eternally liberated, there are two categories. One is the living entity who is eternally liberated, and another is the Supreme Lord who is eternally liberated. So he talks about the difference between the eternally conditioned living entity and the Paramatma who is eternally liberated. So that he talks about from verse number 5 to 7. So here he says that here about the, difference between the Jiva and Paramatma, and they are displaying opposite qualities although they are situated in one body. So in the sixth verse he gives a famous analogy. Two birds are sitting in a tree. One bird is trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree. Another bird is completely detached from enjoying the fruit of the tree. So another bird does not eat the fruits. So these two birds refer to the Jiva and Paramatma. There are some very important points in this purport. I will just go through the difference between Jiva and Paramatma. As birds are from the different tree, bird is actually different from the tree. So similarly, Jiva and Paramatma are different from the body. There are different elements of this analogy from that. Bird is different from the tree, so similarly Jiva and Paramatma are different from the body. Both the birds appear similar because both are conscious entities. So Jiva and Paramatma both appear similar because both are conscious. And thirdly, the Jiva and Paramatma, they are actually friends because they work together. And fourth point mentioned is that actually there is no reason for them being together in the tree, because one bird is attached to making a nest and eating the fruit, while the other bird is not attached to making a nest and eating the fruit. In that sense, there is no reason for them being together. And then the fifth point which I explained is that in the case of the super soul, ano niranno api balena bhuyan. Balena means the super soul is actually, he is situated in his own internal potency because of having superior existence. But the living entity, this bird is actually situated in the is under the three modes of nature. So here Prabhupada Hridayananda Maharaj writes a brilliant purport here. So he says, he talks about the faithful and loving nature of the super soul. Usually in this world, one would not like to stay with a person whom he does not like. But in the case of the super soul, like he says, certainly no material friend would remain with his foolish companion for millions of years, especially if his companion were to ignore him or even curse him. But Lord Krishna is such a faithful, loving friend that he accompanies even the most demoniac living entity and is also in the heart of the insect, pig and dog. This is because Krishna is supremely Krishna conscious. Because Krishna is supremely Krishna conscious, therefore he sees every living entity as his part and parcel. So usually in this world, would not like to stay with somebody whom you don't like. One is reason is because why we are not able to tolerate is that because we are not able to see them as part and parcel of Krishna. But Krishna is, although a living entity is rebelled against him, is cursing him, is actually inimical towards him, but still the super soul is following him. In one class Maharaj explained that every living entity, just like people want a personal cell phone, personal this one, actually every living entity has got a personal super soul. Every living entity has got a personal super soul who is actually following that Jiva. And in the Puranjan section, when the king Malayadvaja leaves his body and the Vaidarbhi is actually lamenting in separation from Malayadvaja, so that time a old Brahmana comes. That old Brahmana actually represents the super soul, and that old Brahmana tells Vaidarbhi, do you not recognize me? I am your very old friend. I have been with you for a long time, like that he mentions. So what actually it means is that the super soul has been there with the living entity. It's mentioned that even during the pralaya, even during the night of Brahma, when the living entities are sleeping in the body of Mahavishnu, those who have not gone back to Godhead, they are actually still in the material, those who are sleeping in the body of Mahavishnu, even at that time, the super soul is actually accompanying the living entity. So therefore it's mentioned that so because Krishna is actually able to see every living entity as his own part and parcel. So although the living entity is rebelling against him, because he is the supremely Krishna conscious person, Krishna, so therefore he is not leaving the living entity. So according to Bhagavatam, Krishna is supremely Krishna conscious, but that Krishna feels that somebody else is actually knows my glories more than myself. So he feels that actually Srimati Radharani is more Krishna conscious than myself. So according to Chaitanya Charitamrita purport in the Adi Leela, you'll see that Srimati Radharani is supremely Krishna conscious. So therefore Krishna comes in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So that is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is actually form of Krishna in a state of self introspection. When we try to introspect ourselves, we try to understand like what is my nature, what are my strength and what are my weaknesses. That's why we do introspection. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in a state of self introspection. He is trying to understand what is it in me which devotees are actually, which gives more pleasure to the devotees when they serve me. So that Srimati Radharani is supremely Krishna. When you see this purport, Krishna is supremely Krishna conscious, when you understand the super soul form of Krishna. But that Krishna who is supremely Krishna conscious, he is considering somebody to be more Krishna conscious than himself. So that is actually Srimati Radharani. So then the next verse, Krishna says that the bird who does not eat the fruits of the tree, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who by his omniscience perfectly understands his own position and that of the conditioned living entity, represented by the eating bird. The living entity, on the other hand, does not understand himself or the Lord. He is covered by ignorance and is thus called eternally conditioned, whereas the Personality of Godhead, being full of perfect knowledge, is eternally liberated. So only thing, I will stop with this verse. I will just mention a few points in this purport and then I will stop. So in this particular verse, if you see, the word Vidya comes. Yo Vidyaya Yuk Satu Nidya Baddo. Yo Vidyaya, the third line. The third line it comes Yo Avidyaya Yuk Satu Nidya Baddo, and the fourth line it comes Vidya Mayo Yaha Satu Nitya Mukta. So we previously talked about Vidya potency and Avidya potency. Because of Avidya, a person is in bondage, and because of Vidya, a person gets liberated. But in this particular verse, the word Vidya, which comes in the fourth line, here the word Vidya refers to the internal potency of Krishna. So among the material potency of Krishna, there are two divisions, Vidya and Avidya. Because of Avidya potency, we are in bondage, and by Vidya potency we can get liberation. And if you remember, we started this class by saying that, but after a person liberated, even that Vidya, that knowledge, that also disappears, just like the fire after consuming the fuel, it also dies down. So in that case, that Vidya refers to the distinction between the matter and spirit. But here the word Vidya, which is mentioned in the fourth line, Vidya Mayo, it refers to the internal potency of the Lord. That's how the purport begins. The word Vidya Maya in this verse indicates the internal potency of the Lord and not the external potency. Within the material world, there is Vidya and Avidya. But in this verse, the Vidya means the internal spiritual knowledge by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fixed in omniscience. But the material Vidya potency, the living entity, comes out of the bodily concept of life. And then when a person completely becomes situated in the constitutional position of the Lord, comes to the stage of prema, then he is no longer, even that Vidya potency also dies down. But that Vidya is only meant to come out of the bodily concept of life. But once a person situated in the state of transcendence, like ecstatic love for Krishna, then this vidya is no, the distinction between matter and spirit is no longer required. Just like example is that when a person is haunted by a ghost, you administer some herbs or you put some jewels in order to make him come out of the haunting. But once a person comes out of that haunting by the ghost, then there is no need of the jewels. There is no need of the jewels. So those jewels are compared to the vidya, the material vidya potency. But here the word vidya mayo refers to the internal potency of the Lord, because in which the Lord is situating himself. So it should be understood that even when the living entity is in a liberated condition, his knowledge is never equal to in quantity to that of the personality of Godhead. So I'll stop here. So from the 5th to 7th verse, Krishna talked about the difference between the
soul and the
conditioned soul and the Paramatma. Because there are two kinds of liberated souls. One is the liberated living entity, and another is the super soul, the Supreme Lord himself. Talked about difference between the conditioned living entity and the Paramatma. Now from the 8th verse till the 17th verse, he will talk about the difference between the conditioned living entity and the liberated living entity. That is the next difference from 8th to 17th verse. That will actually take up next week. So I will send the questions also, but apart from the questions which I send, this overview of the 9th chapter, that will compulsorily come. Overview of the previous chapter. Overview of the 9th chapter will definitely come. And for us actually in the conditioned state, we cannot, although Paramatma is guiding us, but we cannot hear the words of the Paramatma. But then how to hear the words of the Paramatma? Through the spiritual master. The spiritual master acts like an amplifier. Paramatma is speaking to us, but because we are not liberated, we are not able to hear the words of the Paramatma. The spiritual master amplifies the words of the Paramatma, and we can actually, spiritual master, Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, amplify the words of the Paramatma. We have to take his guidance. So Prabhupada writes in a purport that initially, when a living entity is sincere, he wants to come to God. Initially, the super soul guides the living entity to a bona fide spiritual master. And when the living entity agrees to be trained by the spiritual master, and agrees to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and then when he becomes liberated, then the super soul directly talks to the living entity. So in our stage, we can hear the words of the Paramatma through the words of the spiritual master, who acts like an amplifier. There is a very clear statement, it comes many places, but one place is 7th canto, one of the last purports in 7th canto, Prabhupada says, unless a living entity is trained by the spiritual master, one cannot hear the words of the Paramatma. In our case, how to hear the words of the Paramatma? Through the spiritual master.
When we are liberated, we need that too.
Then the Lord will personally speak.
Actually, Jagada Minty, he was everyday, he was expert in practicing out of body experience. And he did Bhagavad Gita course with Radha Vandana Prabhu, and then he joined our group. And he knows verbatim each and every word in Bhagavad Gita, all 7 different writings. And he is not telling, he is a very genuine person, in everything he is perfect actually. Like, you know, very disciplined and simple, very knowledgeable. This person, they have a group, they practice. He was in the Vishnu consciousness, he was in the other group, and they come together and they every day practice for meditation. And he was always telling, I will do this meditation, meditation, but we never learned from him. But the thing is, he is an expert in the practice of out of body experience. And he says, it is a very easy task for him every day. I was just thinking, he says, the night when he goes to sleep, he already informs his wife, see, I am going to go out of my body. He goes and then comes. And then he says, then I was just thinking that Atma only goes, no, Paramatma will still remain in the body.
Soul goes out of the body, is observing. Maybe some mystic siddhi they are doing it. The soul sometimes during the surgery, sometimes we hear that. No?
Yeah, we hear. Yeah.
The person recollects the conversation of the this one. Like he's still observing that.
The anesthesia effect goes away, na? Even slightly, even I have experienced, you know, the anesthesia effect is gone, but we can hear the conversation.
You can tear up the extra paper.
So Atma is going or Paramatma is still?
So super soul is always there with the Atma.
So when the soul leaves, then that means both soul and super soul, they, as a pair, they leave the body and then come back.
Yeah, super soul is always there with the Paramatma. That much we understand. It is everywhere. So we can correct the papers, Madhuri.
Which?
Today's papers. Okay. I'll just tell you what is to be expected in the answer. Then you can actually correct.
Okay.
I just want to correct. Ghanshyam bro, give the papers. See, the first question. Purport. You are waiting for GFS Sanskrit?
No,
no,
no.
Forests.
So that. Eight chapter. So that this point and 12 forests and actual way of getting up to this last one.
Oh, yeah.
And this Pingala's mood of repentance, I just expect the translation of those verses in their essence, 30 to 34.
After the translation, the essence.
The main points from the translation.
Okay.
10 marks. Sudden mood of renunciation, the rapid. This also the translation of these 4 verses. There.
Okay.
They can express in their own words.
Okay.
But they have to capture the points in the translation.
Not what is given in the purport.
No.
Okay.
And this is a lesson from the arrow maker. And it is very clear, imports of the words antaram and bhai in the purport.
Just the definition that is given, no? Of antaram and bhai.
Even the exact words are not there, but the essence
is there.
Should be there.
This also from the text only?
Spider and wasp.
Spider ka text. Translation of the text. And the wasp, okay.
The spider. It creates the net from its own dissonance and dissolves. Similarly, the Supreme Lord.
Similarly, okay, got it.
Yeah. Similarly, the Supreme
the
Lord
wasp is also
creates
very clear.
And annihilates.
Okay.
So you can do it next week. Okay. In the separate paper, you make the marks, or the candidate and the marks.
Okay.
You can enter it.
There
is one folder.
Okay.
You can check in that folder. I did not go through what all.
He sent it through mail or?
So somebody came and gave me actually. He had, I think, told somebody to collect some and then he
and then you copied in this pen drive.
They came, he gave me this pen drive.
But I gave you one pen drive, no?
This only, no?
Achha, this was given to him before.
Must be, I think.
Achha, because I just want to know whether the same pen drive I gave it to you.
I do not remember which pen drive, but this devotee came and gave this pen drive.
But previously had sent my pen drive to him.
Yes.
So then means, thank you so much.
Audio lecture, so. Two chapters after
audio lectures. You can get them over. You will be having Ramachandra Prasad. You can give it to Mataji. How you give it in pen driver?
Yes, Prabhuji. Hari Bol. Ek
result mein sab aa gaya na.